Welcome to Ask an Innovator, where we interview senior executives about innovation. You can find us at askaninnovator.com or subscribe with your favorite podcast app. I'm your host, Josh Barker, CEO of City Innovation Labs.
Today, I've got with me Aram Karapetian, and he's with Woodland Foods. So welcome, Aram.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. So today we're going to talk about innovation, and specifically in the food space.
Yep.
So this will be a really interesting conversation. So I'd love a little bit of background about you and yourself and your company.
Sure. Well, myself, I started in the food business at the age of 15, now 49. So I've been in the food business quite a while, 34 years, working as a cook for 10 years, working in luxury hotel business for about 9 years with Ritz-Carlton and Hyatt Hotels, and just happened upon Woodland Foods and was absolutely drawn in. This is 15 years ago when Woodland Foods was much smaller. Woodland Foods does not do the obvious. They literally carry all of the ingredients in every category that you've heard of and those that you haven't heard of. And when I found them online and I decided I wanted to transition out of hospitality, I literally bugged the owner, David, until he created a job for me because I just knew that this is the space I wanted to be in. Yeah. So Woodland Foods has been in business about 30 years. It's owned by David and Diana Moore. Both of them have a background similar to mine, having worked in luxury hospitality for many years. And they basically, their hobby or one of their hobbies is mushroom foraging and just the outdoors. As an outgrowth of that and an outgrowth of their love of food, they kind of worked into a side business of selling foraged mushrooms to restaurant friends of theirs and others. And so it really started off as a smaller business where David and Diana, their goal wasn't necessarily to become who we've become. It was to make a mark, in the industry with their friends and do something that they love. And from that, they've built a business over the last 30 years that now we serve the largest national and international companies in industrial food manufacturing, food service distributors all over the country, and retailers. So pretty much every category of market. And then we've continued to relentlessly follow our fascination in adding new ingredients, new products, and really doubling down on value-added creations. We look at Woodland Foods as the largest pantry of the world's ingredients out there. We have behind us here a warehouse that literally has seeds, grains, spices, fruits, nuts, mushrooms, chilies, beans from 65 countries around the world.
Wow.
And we actively find them, create a supply chain, buy them, house them, and sell them.
Wow. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
I think I saw from 1989 too, that's when they first started foraging mushrooms.
Correct.
That's a very long legacy. Wow.
It is. It is. In the business, it's interesting. I'd like to take credit, but it's probably just more universal timing or whatever. But when I started 15 years ago, there really became an emphasis, I think, in the marketplace with consumers having kind of saying it's okay not to be a meat and potatoes guy. It's kind of cool, actually, to learn about food and to experience Thai food and to go out and, the Food Network, I think, sort of was the generator of this interest in food as being experiential art and science and just pure pleasure. And so with that and with what David and Diana were doing, it just kind of converged. And I came in as sort of a culinary resource and as a salesperson and just saying the potential of the direction consumers were going and what we already had and what we could become and kind of connecting the dots with our business partners. And from there, we've really blossomed.
A lot of the innovation, obviously, that we talk about, it could be technology, it could be systems or processes with you guys. We're talking about a lot about food innovation. That's pretty neat. This is the first conversation I think I've ever had with anyone about food innovations. Maybe you could describe, what is innovation to you and to Woodland Foods?
Sure. Well, for us, innovation it starts with imagination. It starts with being open to possibilities. And I had once been to a food and wine discussion with Marcus Samuelson and Rocco DiSpirito. And one of the things that the points that they made is every chef wants to be creative. Every chef wants to be innovative. In order to do that, you really have to have sound, disciplined understanding of fundamentals. We want to create a scenario where people are empowered to imagine, people are empowered to create, but also that we have resources available to educate people to, one of the key pieces that we look at when we hire somebody is, do you have an innate curiosity about food? Are you innately fascinated with food? Because if you are, we can work with that. We can put fertilizer on that. We can water that. We can cultivate that and see that grow. And from there, and from learning some of the fundamentals about food, you start coming up with ideas that relate to already existing trends, but you something brand new. We look at innovation as using your imagination to come up with new ideas, but also having a commitment to the resources necessary to problem solve and build us build a map that helps support that idea and see if it's viable for market.
Sure. I'm always fascinated with people that can, I asked this to my team jokingly, even before I came here, I said, how did people figure out how to just make stuff? You know, like we're talking about like food, like how do they figure that? So I imagine you guys have like a lab or something that you're constantly checking. How do we combine different ingredients to get a certain taste? Would that be accurate?
It is. We have a culinary staff. We have an R&D. We have R&D personnel, food scientists. Many people, such as myself, such as the owners, have a culinary background. Mm. So we're all kind of versed on the fundamentals of taste. That's one of the advantages Woodland Foods has is as we develop and innovate, many companies have the disadvantage that they develop these ideas and then they have to go find the supply chain and they have to be damn sure that it's going to be successful because then they have to make the purchases to have the ingredients to make that potential a reality. We've already got the ingredients. We're already actively selling all these incredible ingredients. So it's just a matter of really using our thinking caps and really kind of looking at what's possible. And so, yes, we actively support innovation in culinary, but we also actively support innovation in other areas as well.
Can you give some examples to the listeners of like, what are some culinary innovation? Like, what are we talking about? Are we talking about combining certain ingredients or are they exotic ingredients? Are they both?
Yeah, so it's a little bit of both. So our innovation is unique agricultural ingredients from around the world. So for example, we're working with one of our partners, Chef Pierre Thiam from Senegal. He's actually a James Beard Award-winning cookbook author of Senegalese cuisine and has a restaurant in New York City. But we are working with him. We actually sent a contingent to Senegal with him to understand the supply of fonio. And fonio is an ancient grain from Africa that's absolutely tiny. It's the smallest grain out there. And it's what we're in the process of right now is helping bring that grain to market. So that's one example. Another is there's all these sophisticated, really unique sauces that people are very interested in. But the idea of making them at home is kind of daunting for at-home consumers. They're pretty much, okay, if I want piri piri, if I want rendang curry, if I want some of these unique things, I'll need to go to a restaurant. Well, our chef has worked with his team to develop really, truly authentic, high-quality versions of these sauces that are in a packet. Literally, all you do is add hot water. And you've got a perfect piri piri, a perfect Thai green curry, a perfect rendang curry, a whole myriad of products that we've developed that just, again, it's what is possible if we put our mind and our ingenuity to it. So those are a couple of examples.
And it sounds like even more than just food. And what I mean by that is you guys have that food concentration, but you're talking about fonio, and that's in Africa, right? You
said it is Western Africa.
Western Africa, and you said there's not the logistics supply chain is probably almost non-existent or difficult.
Yeah, would call it impossible.
Impossible, impossible. Right. So for you guys, you go in and not only say, hey, we need to do something about fonio, you also say, hey, some of the innovation is around how do we do the supply chain? How do we get it in and out of the country?
Yes.
Which is even a broader challenge.
It's huge. Innovation and supply chain, it requires a ton of creativity. And this has been a great example of that. So once you make the decision that, hey, we want to look at how do we build a path from getting fonio from Africa to the United States? This is innovative as well. We looked at, when we make decisions like this, a hierarchy of factors in terms of importance that we have to look at. Number one is always food safety. Second is business resources. Third is conformity and consistency. And fourth is fulfillment, being able to get products. And so we look at that and there's a lot of questions at on the top tier of those hierarchy of factors. And so we have to put our problem solving hats on. And so we've gone to Togo, we've gone to Senegal, we've gone to Mali, we've gone to Nigeria, what we've learned is that each has its complication, each has its opportunity, each addresses different issues and problems, each have different partners that have different levels of resources and commitment, taking a multi-pronged approach and then looking at their proximity to airports, the transport to those airports, what we can do to mitigate the complications from their end. From there, looking at the requirements of the FDA to make sure that we're bringing in a safe, reliable product. And then we have to make the personal decision of, since there is a long lead time, 4 months or so, how much do we purchase? You know, as we're building a brand new market for something, and what's the frequency of those purchases, and can we be reliable to the supplier partner? All of that is a form of innovation because it's all imagining what's possible.
That's right. Another question I have for you is to undertake something as big, you know, you said, oh yeah, we're using PhoneU now. Well, that's like that one phrase, you know how much blood, sweat, and tears went into the background of that.
Yes.
So with that, how do you guys just select, hey, if it's PhoneU, do you kind of have people just kind of going around the world investigating different things?
We do. We've had this for a long time. We have a very unique approach to it, which is that we've told every human being here at Woodland Foods that you're all part of innovation. And what we've done is we have a master list. So we have 1,600 ingredients. And so what we've done is we ask if you've been to trade shows, if a potential supplier has presented something to you, if you've imagined something in your sleep, if you've seen something in the marketplace or come up with an outrageous idea, whenever those things come, bring those back, send it to myself, send it to our corporate chef, send it to our head of project management. And then we built out a list that categorizes it by category, by type. And then we have a bunch of benchmarks that we look at. How relatable is it? A twist on the familiar. In other words, how marketable is it? We look at, you know, how many origins there are. What's the potential scale up? What are the complications of scale up? We look at how approvable our source is, you know, all these different aspects of it. And once we say, okay, this is viable, from there, we'll go ahead and start researching it and putting the resources against it. So we've got this massive list, and we meet, the group of us meet quarterly and go through that list and say, okay, where are we with this? Where have we developed a Merck and chili? Should we buy that blend in South America, or should we bring in the ingredients and do our own blend and have a little bit more control over the quality? And then we look at, okay, what haven't we addressed? What's next on the docket? What have we heard in the marketplace? And we feel like we don't want to be behind. We want to create markets for something. So we have those conversations actively and formally.
So what does that look like for you guys? Do you obviously, I'm sure you take a look at trends, but how do you guys look at those trends in the food industry? Because that's very black box to me. And then additionally, how do you guys validate this is something that people want?
Yeah. The fact is we look at ourselves as creators of markets, and we don't worry too much about what's been established in market research and so forth. We view it all, we look at it all, but what we really trust is our own innate fascination. If we're fascinated by something, if something sparks an interest or makes us curious, we assume then that our business partners are going to be fascinated as well. And we have the benefit of being able to take more risks here at Woodland Foods, because if it's a value-added product that's developed based on our pantry of ingredients, we've already got the ingredients. All we have to do is develop it and offer it. We don't even need to scale up at it until we could pre-sell the product. And if it's something that's a unique product that we want to bring in, that we want to bank on, we have enough of a reputation out there in the marketplace around the world where we can say, listen, nobody in the U.S. knows what PhoneU is, but we want to develop a market for it. What we need is for you to work with us. We need to get a price that makes sense in the current marketplace, given other similar products. We need to be able to buy smaller amounts so that our upfront investment mitigates certain risks and so forth, that it's something we can take on confidently. And then what we'll do is we'll use our many, many connections in all areas of the food world and leverage that to build awareness. And we'll use our culinary team to consider applications. And we'll do the work needed to build out a market. And if it works, fantastic. If it doesn't work, fantastic. Because at the end of the day, if you talk to our customers, they love us as a reliable supplier. But the thing that makes us truly unique is the fact that we have products that nobody else does. They keep touching, plugging back into us, because innovation has never been more important. Having new products has never been more important. And it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
It is a ton of work. So they know that reliably they can come to us, if nothing else, to know to see what's new. And so if nothing else, it's an investment in our own mystique and our own reputation.
You guys consider yourself test subjects, I'm sure, of the foods, but do you have some people that you kind of test out as you look at PhoneU and the different dishes you put together and say, hey, let's test this out?
We do.
Yeah. And so, how do I get on that list?
Well, you're on it now.
Excellent.
The way that has been easiest and most reliable, actually, is to, we have a commitment to culinary at trade shows, and we're in a lot of trade shows. And so we'll bring, when we bring PhoneU, even before we're actually going to launch the product, we'll offer PhoneU out of trade show, and we'll you know, have sell sheets and inform people about it and serve the product and see what people think, and we'll get feedback that way. And so that's one of the best ways that we can do it. Otherwise, we have people that are like, we work with very closely, industrial on the research and development side, food service on the distribution side, the people that are always looking for something new and unique, and retail customers as well. But we'll send them off samples and say, play with this. What do you think of this? You know, how would you use it? Do you think it's marketable? What questions do you have? What concerns do you have? And start getting feedback. And from that, we'll get confidence or we'll question things.
Sure.
Yeah. So that's kind of the approach.
Yeah. I'm very unfamiliar with the food space of in my background. So I'm come from digital. There's certain trends that, oh, like mobility and AR, VR and AI. Well, with there, is there trends with food, like certain foods, there's just trending in different tastes and different things. And how do you guys uncover that?
The way I look at it, or the way we look at it, is consumers are becoming much, much more informed. There's a small list of things out there in the world that have a functional purpose, but also are pure pleasure as well. And I think more and more, as people are getting informed on the health impact of food, the cause and effect of what you put in your body and the effect that it has, but also people have tastes and they look at food as a pure pleasure and enjoyment and time with family and time with friends and so forth. So increasingly people want it all. They want to eat food that's energizing, that makes them feel good, that they have confidence is good for their body and is also delightful. That trend, I think, continues. And so, therefore, what we're looking for is always something new, always something exotic, flavors that are, you know, that are traditional flavors that people haven't experienced before. We just launched Suya spice from Nigeria and Chakalaka from South Africa.
Wow.
Yeah, a ton of different unique products. But also another trend we're seeing is people using nutraceutical ingredients, compounds or ingredients that don't necessarily have a culinary contribution, but contribute from a health perspective to a dish. We really see that more and more, that that's going to be coming on, where functional ingredients are going to play a role in the way people cook and the way people eat. So that's a big part of it. But really, I think it's people becoming aware and really looking at food as being fun and energizing, and also one of the greatest things that they can do to contribute to their health. The other thing that I think is really awe-inspiring when I first thought of it is that, you know, if you believe in this world of, you know, where people are becoming a bit more conscious, and you believe that you want to be an activist in some way, you want to contribute to the greater good, you want to have a cause in your life, there's no single space that you can have a greater impact with less effort than what you choose to eat. You can affect the world in an incredibly positive way by how you choose to eat and how you relate that to the people that you love and the people in your world. And so, choosing foods that have less of an impact on the environment, choosing foods that affect cultures and civilizations and societies that are underprivileged and don't have resources, and helping them cultivate industry, choosing foods that affect people's health so that we're lessening the economic impact on healthcare and taking care of people, and people as they grow older, you know, the quality of lives that they have. You know, there's just so many ways that food affects the world, the life that we live, you know, and the future of the life that we live, that it's when you start looking at it that way, it's exciting.
Yeah.
Because everybody can do it.
And I feel like there is something to be said, which I think you guys are hitting on too, of mystique around food is my mind is goes to the word experience, like having these experiences with friends and family. And it seems like you guys are hitting on that too.
Well, that's a belief. That's actually one of our purpose statements, is that we want people to experience the world through food. So travel without getting on an airplane.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, these are things I do at home. And I really, when I talk to customers and I talk to other consumers and so forth, that really energizes, like, the idea of, you know, we're all short on time. The idea of making a signature soup, a vegetable soup or something on the weekend, and realizing that, you know, using a lot of these flavor profiles, you could add mole one day, you could add green, you know, a vegan Thai green curry another day, you can add shakalaka or suya spice another day, you can add pilpel chuma, and you can reinvent food so easily. The other thing that I absolutely love is salads. You know, everyone knows salads are good for you, but people get salad fatigue. It's it's like you need a lot of it to fill you up, and you get tired of eating it, right?
Yes.
So what I've been doing, and I've it's like a game changer and you won't believe it until you try it, is making really monumental salads.
Yeah.
And I'll pre-prep a lot of like heavier things, cruciferous vegetables and so forth, chopped up broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage, carrots, things like that. Have that, you can pre-prep that because they're not hyper perishable like green leafy vegetables and so forth. Take that, mix that with green leafy vegetables, maybe add some garbanzo beans, add some roasted sunflower seeds or some sort of a nut that's got some oil, slice up an avocado, but then make a dressing, use a very little bit of that. And but here's the kicker is I use prodigious amounts of unique spice blends and I give it a signature flavor. And what it ends up tasting like is like a big bowl of Doritos. It does.
Sounds
it's like,
amazing.
Yes. It's like these spinach leaves crusted with pilpul chuma that it's just like, it has that same craveability of a chip where you just can't stop eating it. So salad fatigue is out the door. You just keep stabbing that salad and like wolfing it down until it's gone. And then you're like, where's more? And you get, I'll do that at lunch and just get absolutely stuffed, but I don't get that heavy weighed down feeling as though if I had eaten a big, you know, sandwich or something like that. Yeah. No, you feel energized and you've totally enjoyed the experience and you want more.
Yeah.
And it's very healthy.
Oh, yeah. I gotta get some of that. How do I get a Dorito salad?
I will. You got an inside track on that, man. I got you covered.
Good. Now, what about the future of foods for you guys?
Future of foods is, well, there are a lot of increasing, and for good reason, increasing requirements by the government on food safety. And it poses unique challenges when you're a company like ours that's bringing in product from Guatemala and Sri Lanka and Bhutan and West Africa and you know, all over the world, areas that don't necessarily have the same commercial resources that we have or others in the United States have. And so clean supply chain where you're bringing in product, but you're not compromising the quality, the sensory integrity. So for example, bringing in product that you can sterilize, but when you steam sterilize, oftentimes you can impact the volatile oils or the color of the product or ingredient or the flavor of it. Things like ETO and irradiation have a stigma associated with it. We've invested in something called NeoPure. We're kind of early adopters, so there's some risks associated with that, but it's going to be up and running within the next month. And that's basically, it applies an organic solution to raw agricultural ingredients. That solution, it's a wet water-based solution, and this is a completely organic product that goes into the crevices and cracks of little grains. It sterilizes them completely, and then we put it through a low-grade heat that dries it, and then you've got completely sterile product. So that's innovation that helps us bring these crazy, incredible, beautiful products to market. And it's been interesting to see these massive companies, these huge, you know, Fortune 50 food companies that are multinational, are all on the bandwagon. They know this is that consumers aren't the consumers of 20 years ago.
Right.
These consumers, they want unique, interesting foods that make them, you know, excited. But they have risks. They're very, very careful about addressing those supply chain risks, food safety risks. So we've actually adopted this to help us mitigate those risks so that we don't have to close the floodgates. We can open the floodgates a little wider and start bringing in more unique ingredients and offering more solutions, you know, being service oriented to our customers and bringing them the products that they don't even know that they need. So that's a big part of it. The other is really understanding the verifiable, provable facts, the health benefits of foods, the nutritional makeup of foods, and also, as I'd mentioned earlier, edible compounds that have only a nutraceutical role. They're not necessarily a culinary role. We're opening up our mind to that. One of our firewalls had been that, you know, any ingredient that we consider has to have a culinary first application. That was our way of having some discipline about the myriad of ingredients that we bring in. Now that firewall is getting broken down because we realize that people want, when they eat, why not take medicine? I did a presentation at the Research Chefs Association several years back about the trend towards plant-based foods. And this was maybe 9 years ago or so. And one of the data points got some Mintel research that showed that baby boomers really, they don't want to take a ton of pills as they get older. They want food to be their medicine.
Yeah.
And how do they do that confidently? And so creating foods that speak to people's health and are also absolutely delicious, that is the golden key. That is the future of food.
Mm. Like your Dorito salad.
Like my Dorito salad, which is amazing.
Oh, that's awesome. So through all this, I mean, what have you guys learned? What have you personally learned at Woodland Foods that you could just give back to, you know, as a takeaway for people that are listening to this?
One of the things is that I think you need to make it part of your personality as a company. You need to formalize it so that every person from every level of the organization identifies themselves as being empowered innovators. At Woodland, we've created our company vision that includes destination goals, a short list of destination goals. One is to be a world-class innovator. We have cultural commitments. We have principles. We have leadership meetings here where every leadership meeting I ask two people to come back the next meeting with disruptive, innovative ideas. It could be anything other than M&A that would help us rethink the way we do things, and no limits. And building out a culture that really fosters idea, you know, where people feel comfortable and feel encouraged and feel recognized for presenting ideas to the fold. I think that is very, very important. Also realizing that it's not just the product that you sell. It's also a mindset. It's how you relate to people. It's how you hold meetings. It's how you interact with your customers and with your suppliers. Creating a mindset of innovation where you're always looking to develop and grow. And also realizing that it's a worthy investment, that it's now more than ever, you can't rest on your laurels. That's trite. People understand that, but not everybody acts on it. There has to be a certain component of your business where you're investing on people working on your business and not in your business, where people have to start developing and building things out so that you're ahead of the curve. The other thing is that you should not bridle or limit that at all, but you should counter that with a very disciplined firewall or very disciplined filter for the ideas that you actually pour resources into and commercialize or develop out, because you should always be thinking about how you can improve. But as you grow, you'll want to say more no more than you say yes, and really focus on those high payoff initiatives and high payoff investments.
Thanks for your time, Aram. It's been a lot of fun just chatting with you about innovation. And yeah, this has been another successful Ask an Innovator.
Appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Ask an Innovator. Visit us on our website, www.askaninnovator.com. This podcast has been sponsored by City Innovation Lab.